All right, that sounds like it might be everybody. And Matthew Wasserberger with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Spoken with all of you, or most of you.
Matt, this is Rex again. Question about the participants in today's conference call. Are they near completion or all along the conveyor belt?
It looks like we have a lot of chambers there from the March 31st deadline, so they are roughly a little less than a month till they'll be submitting their application. And the August 31st deadline was also invited to this conference call, so chambers that are, let's say, 5 or 6 months out.
Okay. Let me start out by, first of all, congratulations on at least inquiring about this process. It sounds like almost all of you have made a commitment. The accreditation process that's undertaken by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has been in existence for about 40 years. And as long, even though it's been in existence for four decades, there's still only a couple hundred chambers across the country that have achieved this milestone. And it's an investment in your future, in the quality of your programs to your members, and I think it has a lot of tangible benefits that hopefully we can touch on today. I'd like to get down to some of the more practical aspects, the takeaways, if you will, of your investment in the accreditation process. Very little about me. I'm now in Lynchburg, Virginia. We just 2 years ago we went through. I went through the fifth accreditation process that I participated in during my chamber career, and we were fortunate enough to achieve five-star status. Matthew may have selected me as a poster child because I think we're a typical chamber. We're not a large chamber. We're not a small chamber, probably someplace right in the middle. And I'm familiar with chambers that are substantially smaller than us that have achieved four-star and five-star status. As all of you know, a chamber may earn one of four rankings, either basic accreditation, three-star, four-star, or five-star accreditation. And once you've earned accreditation, an accredited chamber of commerce must reapply every 5 years. I've developed a PowerPoint on basic points that I'm going to make today, and after the conference call, if you'd like to email me with your address, I'll share a copy of this PowerPoint presentation with you. If you have a committee or if you'd like to make a presentation to the board of directors, just change my stuff on the title slide and I think it'll work for that purpose. My email address is rhammond, H-A-M-M-O-N-D, at lynchburgchamber.org. And Lynchburg is Y-L-N-C-H-B-U-R-G. Again, rhammond at lynchburgchamber.org. When Matthew and I have done these conference calls in the past, there's been a lot of interest in that, so let me make that available to you. As most of you probably already know, the U.S. Chamber accreditation process identifies strengths and weaknesses in nine critical areas, those being governance, finance, human resources, government affairs, program development, communications, technology, facilities, and benchmarking. And going into this process, each one of you in your respective chambers must have asked the question, is this worth the time? And to that question, I would say a resounding yes, at least for me personally and for the chambers that I've worked with. It's going through this process is one of the best self-evaluations you can give to your chamber, an opportunity for self-improvement. It gives you an opportunity to compare yourself against the best practices being pursued in our profession. It's a vehicle for change. You can use this to actually implement changes that you want made within your organizations. It's a tremendous education opportunity for your volunteers and for your board. It can get your chamber recognition and publicity. It's a great tool to retain and attract members. And it's a it provides motivation and is a basis for continued improvement in your organization. And perhaps even, you know, it may even lead to job security. In terms of strategy tips for your application, those of you that are farther along the conveyor belt, you probably know most or not all, if not all of these. For those of you in the next application deadline, some of these may be particularly helpful. But here's what I'd advise you to do at this point. There's a lot of people that have been engaged in the accreditation process across the country, and whether you've met these people through state associations, regional meetings, U.S. Chamber Meetings Institute, etc., you all know chamber friends who have gone through this process, and based on whether this is your first time in the process and you're shooting for basic accreditation or three-star accreditation, or whether you're swinging for the fence and you're trying to get four or five-star accreditation, the U.S. Chamber website has a listing of all the chambers that have earned these various levels of distinction. And it's highly likely that you know some of these people, and they may even be your neighbors. So talk to your chamber friends about what they did and get their ideas and tips on how to be successful in this process. It's probably the most valuable thing that I did after the U.S. Chamber went from a pass-fail system to the current 3-4-5-star system that they currently employ. You all have identified the best submission date and deadline. Like most aspects of our operation, identification of a deadline is very important to pacing yourself and letting people that are involved in the project know when they need to be done with the various aspects that are involved in what's a pretty involved process. I will admit to you that we selected a date, and based on the work that we had done to that point, we decided we could probably earn an extra star if we waited for one submission period. So we regrouped. I notified my board of our intent, and we were indeed successful in getting an extra star as a result of that effort. While this is a continuous improvement process, you really want to accomplish as much as you can on the first application, or in this case, your next application, the one that you're currently employed in. So again, use this as an opportunity to achieve as much as you possibly can, whether it's 3, 4, or 5 stars. If you're familiar with the process in the past, it was highly emphasized that there be an extensive committee system put together. I think one of the benefits and the advantages of the new and improved accreditation system is that this can easily be undertaken by a small overview committee of volunteers. I believe this is largely a staff-driven process, but I think it's politically smart for you to engage a small group of involved volunteers so that they can make the reports at the board level and you can play the Me Too role. Get them involved. Let them take credit and aspects of it. Let them be your spokesperson and tell your board of directors how important this process is. Was there a question?
No, I'm sorry. I forgot we weren't muted.
Oh, okay.
I apologize. Excuse
no, not at all. You know, and this is how I tore down our process. What I call the first wave, we gathered the easy materials, and we put checks in the box of things that we already had in place. The second wave was when we identified other doable things that were quite easy to do by just writing a policy statement, things that didn't take much work to just fine-tune. And in a lot of cases, chambers operate with policies and procedures that they don't write down, but you have them, you understand them, and it's just a matter of putting them on paper and then sending them by your board of directors and then recording it in your minutes. The third wave, I think, is the most essential one, and that's to beg, borrow, steal, amend, and adapt. And that's where your relationship with other chamber executives comes in critically. If you're shooting for 5 stars, find people on that 5-star list who have earned that distinction. In my case, I knew 3 people who had achieved that level. I got on the phone, talked to them, and asked them for a specific laundry list of materials from items that I had not yet been able to put a check on. And if in the past accreditation process, you know, you basically submitted your chamber as it was, and then the most valuable part of the former process was when someone from the U.S. Chamber did a site visit, and then they did a letter of recommendation on the improvements that you could make prior to the next accreditation. The accreditation process that was approved about 7 years ago puts a different emphasis on your effort today, and that's to check as many of those check boxes as you possibly can now. And the process itself tells you what you need to do next time in order to do even better. Also along the line of tips that can help you through the process, I call it divide and conquer. One person can't do the entire process by themselves. I found vice presidents that were in charge of the 9 different programming areas, and I had them do a first draft of the work necessary to pull together to check off the check marks as well as the essay questions. Particularly if you're swinging for the fence and going for 4 or 5 stars, I would advise you to love your essay questions. When I say that, the check mark system is a clear delineation of what you have and what you don't have. And all chambers who check those boxes, you can't tell one chamber from another based on those check marks. But where you distinguish your chamber and give it personality and depth with the people that are going to read your notebooks is through your essay questions. That's your opportunity. It's an expression of who you are and why your chamber is special in your community and state. In terms of specialization, you're going to need at least one individual, probably just one individual, who is Ms. or Mr. Notebook, the one who is the funnel or receptacle for all of the inserts that are necessary for the notebook. Those of you who are advanced in the process probably have 2 thick notebooks already put together of materials, or certainly 1 very thick notebook of materials. And if you wait and do that until the last minute, it's going to be a painful ordeal. If you collect materials as you go, it's much more sustainable, and one person can easily do that. And if you have one person doing it, then you won't put the same material in there 9 or 10 times, and you'll find yourself doing that if you don't have a so-called director of continuity, and that person that puts together your notebook should serve that role. Obviously, from the introductions, it sounds like Matt is known to most of you. I know he works closely with Lauren Mountain at the U.S. Chamber. And you need to get to know them, and particularly if this is your first venture, you need their feedback on how to proceed. You'll need a lot of their advice. And even if you're a veteran of this process, there's new wrinkles and twists from the last accreditation that you completed, and they can clue you in on those changes. And just like most of the things that we do in our profession, that personal relationship is very important, and I think it's important for Matt to be able to picture a face or a voice when he picks up your notebook. Make sure you nail your deadline. And I mean that from driving this thing from an internal perspective. Any volunteers that are involved, any staff that's involved, if you state a deadline, make sure that you accomplish it. And if there's a good strategic reason for you to delay, announce that and make sure that everybody buys into why you're doing it. And I think they'll admire you if you're trying to get an extra star. And we're all competitive, I'm sure without exception. And volunteers are going, if you think you can achieve that extra star, they're certainly going to buy into that rationale. Make sure you deliver. Another piece of advice, make 3 copies of everything. You make 3 sets of notebooks. You only give 1 to the U.S. Chamber. You keep 2, 1 for your chamber and 1 for you to keep when you look for your next job. In terms of making the most of your success, one of the things that I learned when I was a lobbyist was downplay expectations. And, you know, we all remember the old song, Lord, it's hard to be humble, but you need to resist the temptation to say that you're going to get 5 stars.
Too late. Yeah.
I told my people that, you know, if we got 3, it would be a great accomplishment. I thought that we could even get 4, but there's absolutely no way we could get 5. So when I came to them with the news that we had achieved 5-star status, you know, it was a big hit. You know, the corollary is if you promise 5 and you come back with 4, they'll actually be disappointed. Mm-hmm. And 4 is an incredible achievement. And it'd be a tragedy from my perspective if you overpromised and underdelivered. If you say you're going to get 5 stars, it's all right to shoot for it. It's all right to talk about that as a goal, but don't promise that because very few chambers achieve 5-star status. I mean, numerically, that's just a fact of the matter. But talking about it in terms of working toward that as a goal, whether in this cycle or the next cycle, is certainly a laudable thing to do. You know, it surprises me that people that spend so much time on the front end of this process and spend so much work preparation to make this application, they really haven't given any thought to what's going to happen after you get the news. In fact, I talked to a very good friend of mine just 2 days ago, and her chamber had achieved 5-star status. She thought she was going to get 4, and now she didn't really know what to do. So let me encourage you to be ready for the good news. And, you know, you have to make a decision as to what's going to be the best way to announce this good news in your community. In my instance, I had decided that if we achieved 4-star status, that we would put it in our newsletter and we'd put it on our e-blast and web blast and all of our various publications, send out a press release. But when we found out that we achieved 5-star distinction. We had a press conference, balloons. We blew the accreditation logo up into a large marshmallow display board, and we really made a big deal out of it. You know, you may want to do that with 4-star accreditation. If this is your first time, you might want to do it if you earn accreditation at all. Even if you earn basic accreditation, I think there's still fewer than 400 chambers of commerce in the United States that have earned accreditation in any form, and you're probably aware that there's about 7,000 chambers in the United States. So if there's 7,000 chambers and not even 400 who have achieved accreditation, you know, you do the math. It's a pretty special thing, and you should make a lot of noise about it after the fact. Part of that is a part of the preparation is to consider how much media coverage and publicity you want to do. And I would go so far as to have a staff meeting, possibly a meeting with your volunteers, and do a strategic plan on how you're going to your media plan. How are you going to get publicity on this? Because you might you know, good news travels fast, and there's a possibility it could leak out. It didn't leak out for us. I expected 4-star. We were ready to do that. We spent we waited an extra 3 days so we could put together all the mechanics of a press conference so that we could really blow it out. I'm glad we did that. It didn't leak out, and we got excellent, excellent, excellent media play. Then think about other ways that you can market your achievement. Whether you put the U.S. Chamber Accreditation logo on your logo, you include it in your branding process, you put it in your newsletter, you put it on your website. I put it on everything that we possibly could. We were proud of that achievement, understandably so. You probably will be, and it's a way to differentiate your chamber from everybody out there that's competing for money against us. In terms of making the most of your success, remember that the next accreditation cycle is only 4 years away. And it's like our newsletter, folks. As soon as we're done with one, we're working on another. And the accreditation process is an extensive undertaking. And as soon as you complete this one, you need to at least give a thought about what you're going to do next time. Keep your ears open as to how the system is changing. It's become more static than it was 7 years ago, when there seemed to be 3 years in succession where they tinkered with it. They added benchmarking. They really did make it a much better process, but there aren't as many changes in recent years, but there are a few. So you need to be aware of that. And lastly, be ready to try again. If you got 3 stars, next time you can shoot for 4. If you got 4 stars, you can shoot for 5. And certainly if you attain 5-star status, you want to stay there again next year. So be thinking already in terms of how you're going to do that. So at this point, those are my tips on what you can do to close the deal. And more important than what I just said to you, what questions do you have about the, you're at the 2-yard line, it's time to push it in. What do you want to know?
Hello, this is Mark Tebow from Palm Desert Chamber. Can you hear me?
Yes.
My question is what distinguishes the difference between a 4-star and a 5-star? What is it specifically that you are looking for?
The difference between a 4-star and a 5-star chamber is the number of check marks that you fill in. And this is a rule of thumb. This is not, because the essay is a big, big determinant. I'll talk about that part next. But if you can fill in 90% of your check marks and have the documentation to back it up, you got a chance of being a 5-star chamber. If you have 80% of your check marks filled, you've got a chance at the 4-star. If you've got 70 or more, you've got a chance at the 3-star. And 60 or more, you're going to be in the range of basic accreditation. Now, I say that's a rule of thumb. That is not a hard and fast rule, and it's not written down anywhere, I don't believe, because I think the essay questions are absolutely critical. Now, one more note on the check marks. You've got to have the documentation in your notebook that demonstrates that you deserve to fill in that checkbox. Okay, assuming that that's been done effectively, then it's your essay questions that distinguish your chamber in the eyes of the judges and communicates to them why you deserve 5-star, 4-star, 3-star accreditation.
Rex, can we back up just a minute to the check marks and you saying about the documentation? Mm-hmm. If the answer to the question and the documentation isn't included in something they've specifically asked for, say like the policy manual on whatever, should you include whatever it is?
You know,
in addition to that as another attachment?
With every single check mark, I would submit that you need to make the strong a case as possible that you deserve to check in that box. And if you have a hard copy, include it. If you have an informal policy, I would suggest you make it formal. There's a lot of things that, matter of fact, I'd say a dozen things that were informally done at my chamber that we wrote down on paper, passed it by the board as formal policy, put it into our minutes, and then included those minutes in our accreditation submission to demonstrate that we did, in fact, do it. And they don't care that you did it last week. They care that you did it.
Okay.
You know, it, I'm a former journalist, and one of the things that I learned early was that the lead is the most important part of the story, and that you could, you should spend 40 or 50% of your time that you take in developing the entire story on that first paragraph. In a similar way, as much time as you spend on your entire accreditation application, I would urge you to spend a lion's share of your time on the essay questions. I cannot overstate the importance of those essay questions. And while they don't have to be all written by one person, you should have an editor. Because of my background, that was my contribution to our application. I took the raw information and the draft information from my vice presidents, and I personally wrote all of the essay questions. I felt comfortable doing so. You may not, but there's someone on your staff or a volunteer that you can get to fine-tune it and to make it interesting, lively, use present tense as much as possible, just basic rules of writing. But the other thing I'd say about essay questions, you know, we are all guilty of glowing generalities, and that this is not a time for generalities. Make it as specific and measurable and tangible as you possibly can. Can you imagine reading 30 sets of notebooks with just generalized statements that can be made by every chamber in that cycle? Use that as an opportunity to say, you know, quantitatively, you know, use numbers, use statistics, use financial reports, use percentages. Be very specific. You know, we're all justifiably proud of our chambers and our programs, but this is the essay questions are your opportunity to distinguish yourself from everybody else that's submitting in every other chamber in America.
Regs, this is Myrna from Valdosta, Georgia. How important is presentation? How important is it how the package looks?
You know, everything that we do has to have a marketing component, and it does need to look good. But don't spend a whole lot of money on that. You're not going to fool the judges. You know, we have a color laser printer, and we put our logo and the verbiage and slid it inside the cover of the notebooks. And we use tabs, so everything looked nice. But you know, you don't have to spend $200 on the accompanying materials to go with your notebook, but it should have a clean, professional look that reflects your Chamber of Commerce.
Thank you.
I have a question. This is Katrina in Mobile. Specifically, I'm going to go to the Governmental Affairs section of the requirements because it just points out one of my questions. Additional criteria, do you have a PAC, a political action committee? And then it asks a lot of questions about that. For instance, in Alabama, there's a lot of reasons that we don't have a PAC. Is it going to negatively impact our submission that that is not part of our program?
Well, let me tell you that we don't have a PAC,
mm-hmm.
nor do we endorse candidates for political office. In fact, in our bylaws, it says that we're a bipartisan organization that doesn't endorse political candidates. Now, I did use this as an opportunity to go to my board of directors and say, here are a couple things in the accreditation process that they're asking for. Let's revisit this topic. Is a PAC something that we want to do? The board had a very spirited discussion, and we decided definitively that we did not want to go down that road. I think that's one of the byproducts that is produced by the accreditation process, is that it gives you an opportunity to go back to the board of directors and say, you know, is this something that we want to do? The accreditation process gives points for it, so it thinks it's important. But in a couple instances, and those two specifically under governmental affairs, I wasn't able to check that box. Mm-hmm. And
did you explain to them, to the U.S. Chamber, why?
Absolutely. Okay. And pretty much the same thing I just told you.
Right.
It is not within the character of our community for our chamber to go down that road.
Okay. Thank you.
Rex, this is Joe Dickan from Chamber of Commerce in Palm Desert, California.
Yes, sir.
I have a question on the finance section. The responsible accounting, item 2, finance clauses, there's an area that says procedure for application of chamber revenues. I'm having a hard time understanding what that means.
Matt, unless you have something different, it sounds to me like it's asking for a detailing of your budget process.
Yeah, Rex, that's exactly what it is. And we do have on there that we want to see the general accounting practices. But again, that is not set in stone. I believe the GAAP principles are calling for an accrual-based accounting system. But if you have a hybrid or a cash system and it works for you and you can detail how it's working, you meet that requirement. So I think what the question is asking is just to kind of go over your budget process for us.
Matthew?
Yes.
This is Jennifer at River Heights Chamber. We missed roll call, so I apologize.
Oh, that's all right.
I have a specific question in the benchmarking section.
Okay.
Where it asks us to discuss our short-term goals and state if we accomplish those goals, as well as our long-term ones for the two essay questions. When we completed our program development section, it was back in last year, and we took the process that we went through in the fall to create our 2008 goals for our short-term goals.
Okay.
When it asks us in the benchmarking section to define whether we met those objectives, it says the goals you listed in the program development section.
Right.
And that's not going to be applicable yet for us. Can we take the short-term goals that were created from a year ago that I did not list in the program section?
Yes, I believe you can.
Okay.
We don't want the accreditation process to dictate how you are doing your strategic planning. We think it's a good guide, but you know, if it doesn't work for you, that's okay. And I think the new application has been, you know, we've kind of eased up on that point of listing your top five goals and you know, your short-term and long-term goals, and kind of focused it more on just include the document that you are using to plan for your short and long-term goals. So, yeah, that is one point that we're very flexible on.
Okay, so if I want to, for our explain your long-term goals and whether those were met, can I actually use the long-term goals that we submitted for our last accreditation and discuss which ones of the, you know, we met through the last 5 years for our long-term strategy?
No, we actually want to see the current long-term goals, and we're not looking for those to be met. You know, if you've created those last week, of course we don't expect those to be met already when you've planned them out to be completed in 5 years. The benchmarking section is looking for the progress and your ability to kind of benchmark yourself so that you know where you're going and where you are now.
Okay, even though they were only set 5 months ago.
Correct.
Awesome.
So, yeah, we're not going to mark off if you don't have them completed.
Okay.
But we do want to see the process. We want to see what's being done now and what you're planning for in the next couple of months or year or so and completely map that out. So this document's going to be useful for you in three years to kind of see where you're going and where you've been.
Okay.
Matt?
Is that one to you, Rex?
Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Diana from Somerset County Business Partnership in New Jersey. This will be my third time with the organization going through accreditation, but we have some new staff on board and very recent new leadership. Our accreditation was last in 2003, which would mean right now we're up for reaccreditation. Mm-hmm. If we were to postpone the application, right now we're scheduled for August 31st. If we were to reschedule it for December 31st, which would mean it would be approved at the February 09 board meeting, does that mean we have a few months where we're not considered accredited?
No.
Okay.
Right, Matt?
Yeah, we do have a one-year grace period. So if you are in the process of working on the application and we're aware of it by, you know, you filling out the intent to apply form and keeping in contact with me, these 3 months where you'll technically be lapsed, we're not going to hold that against you. We're not going to put on all of our records that you've lapsed for 3 months. We're not expecting you to discontinue the use of, you know, all the logos that you're already using on your stationery. We would ask that maybe you don't print anymore because you know in 3 months you're going to get a higher star. But, you know, yeah, you're not going to lose that accreditation for that short of time.
Great. Thank you.
Rex?
Yes.
This is Nicole Bankston. I work with Jennifer Gale at the River Heights Chamber of Minnesota.
Hey.
Hi. We had a question on something that you noted earlier about attaching things that might not ask for attachments on the checklist.
Uh-huh.
And Jennifer had spoke with Matthew before, and Matthew, correct me if we're wrong in this, but should we, like, if it says, has your chamber attended or had a, held a planning conference, if it doesn't ask for information as an attachment for the planning conference, do we need to attach proof that we had this planning conference and an agenda and things like that, or are those things necessary, or is it just providing more information than it, what's needed?
Matt, that's a salt and pepper question. How, did the judges, I did submit information like that. Does it make any impact on the judges?
I like what you were saying earlier, Rex, and that you need to be able to justify each of those check marks that you make. Sometimes in that, you know, what justifies the planning process is the end result in that planning document that you're using. So while we don't really ask for proof on that question, you know, it might be good to put something in there. Also, one of the interesting things about the process is the consultants are allowed to give 5 discretionary points on top of all the points that you receive for the check marks. They give these for best practices. So if this planning process was innovative and included numerous people from the community and is worth noting, that is something that goes above and beyond normal chamber planning, of course include it, because that is one of the areas where the consultant could give you an extra point, and that one point could be, you know, what makes up for you not having a few of those other points and gets you that final star. So yeah, it's kind of an interesting question there where
my real question is, when I spoke with you guys in DC, I was kind of told just don't throw everything into this piece, really make it concise and make sure that the stuff we're giving is really what they're asking for.
Right.
So I did, I mean, we're almost done, and we didn't go through and put just throw the kitchen sink into it. And I want to make sure that we aren't supposed to be doing that.
Well, but there's degrees of documentation that you can attach. If you had, if you have a one-page agenda of your planning conference or a produced report on outcomes, I think that would be appropriate. Your notes and your breakout sessions, the results of brainstorming, you know, that's excessive. Then, you know, that's a degree of documentation I don't think it's necessary to pursue.
So just kind of an agenda of what we did and who was there, or?
Well, for example, if you included an agenda, you know, it's got the time and date, and so, you know, yeah, it's right there. That's a solid demonstration that you did, in fact, have a planning conference.
Okay.
If you send too much, do you lose points?
I mean, it's going to require, you know, attachment tabs and things. That is that going to confuse the judges at all? Because they all are attachments then.
What I've been doing, and tell me if I'm wrong on the attachments that we're adding that are extra, is simply adding those numbers at the end of whatever section and making reference to it when I, like, refer to it in an essay or something. that I do assign a number to it and put it in that next available.
You know, that way, if they're there, the judges can rifle through it, page through it, based on their style, and it gives them a level of comfort to see supportive documentation.
Okay.
Can we ask how many judges actually look at each application? I mean, is there two or three or a dozen? Or?
We try and stay consistent. I look at them first, and then we have, right now, due to the volume of applications that come in, we only get about 20 per cycle. We have one consultant that reviews that. We also have Laura Mountain, who also reviews them, mm-hmm. and the board.
Okay.
And the board is made up of 11 individuals from, you know, they own businesses to actually running chambers, some of them five-star chambers. So,
okay. That's a lot to read.
A lot of hands, and that's why it is very important that you do have all the tabs there, and they're clearly numbered so that all of these people can rifle through it very quickly, find the documentation that's needed to award you these points, and you will end up with a better score that way, I imagine.
Is it helpful to submit the package on a CD as well as the hard copy?
We've experimented with this. A few chambers have done both. As of right now, we are requiring it to be in paper form, just to stay consistent. Chambers that have included a CD form kind of make it easier on us when we're picking best practices out. It's already in a digital form, so it's easy to put up on our website and give you the recognition that you deserve for having a stellar legislative agenda or technology plan. So it's kind of up to you if you want to include that CD. Chambers have included CD attachments if they're long. I know one chamber had a very extensive 168-page environmental scan that was a thorough account of everything going on in the county, and they submitted that electronically. It saved on paper, it saved on space, and the consultants were able to look at that very quickly.
Anybody else?
This is Shanna with the Kearney Chamber in Nebraska. We have all new staff that has never been through the accreditation before, and right now we're at a 4-star accreditation. Just wondering if you could give me any kind of an idea on benchmarks throughout the process of maybe you should have much of this done or be able to review by a certain date. Our deadline is August 31st.
Hopefully with your benchmarking, you already have processes in place where you can collect those from existing processes. Now, most of that stuff is going to come from either your membership database or your financial records. That's a general answer to your question. Is there anything more specific I can help you with?
I guess just because ours is the August 31st deadline, did you have pretty much everything to go ready to go maybe a month or so before your deadline and then just a final review before you sent it in?
Ours was ready to go about 2 weeks before application. Again, being a former journalist, deadlines are there for a reason. It's always great to be done with something well in advance of a deadline in case there's something extra that you wanted to do, if you wanted to package it a little more attractively. And there are probably little tweaks that we made. Even though we were generally done 2 weeks before, there's probably general tweaks that we made even up till a couple days before application. I think we sent ours in a week early. So give yourself some time because don't make yourself crazy with it.
Thank you.
Yeah, too late.
Well, this is Nicole from the River Heights Chamber. Jennifer and I have to leave for a meeting, but thanks for taking your time to share your information with us.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Max. Very helpful.
And it's been very, very helpful.
Good. Good luck to all of you. Hope you do well.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rex.
You bet, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
Oh, thank you all for attending.
We done, Matt?
Yes. Cool. That was roughly an hour, so I think we went had a good showing.
I thought that went well. Do you know how many people participated?
Right now I have 24 chambers.
24. Very good.
We had 17 last time, so we keep getting a bigger crowd.
24. Great. Yeah, I thought that went well.
No, I did too. Definitely had some good questions there at the end. So, and then your essay questions are, I've always liked that one where you keep telling them how important it is and thorough and quantitative and many examples. So let's hope that sticks.
Well, good. Because, you know, when I judge materials, if they short sheet me on that, you know, there a lot of times the application isn't as good as the product that they're representing, and that's too bad. Because if you're going to go through the effort of applying it all, you want to represent it the best you're capable of. And man, I've tried to put myself in the judge's perspective, you know, your judges for accreditation, all of those notebooks and chambers all saying exactly the same things. How can I distinguish myself?
No, exactly. And, right, we've seen it way too many times where the chambers that you think would be five-star come back at four because of essays. So it's good that you hammer this point home and hopefully help these 24 chambers.
Well, I'm glad I could help, Matt.
Right, no, I'm glad to have you on here again and glad to hear you're not burnt out and look forward to hearing what you have to say at Southeast if you're interested in doing that bonus session.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
You going to Athens?
Yes,
good.
I will be.
Good. Well, we'll have a large time.
I think so. But, yeah, thanks again. And I believe this one is recorded on MP3, so it may make its way up to the website.
Oh, very good.
All right.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Rex.
Bye.
Bye.